Starting back in the 1980s, there was this series of, like, totally ridiculous television commercials in which one super fancy car pulls up alongside another super fancy car, and this rich dude who's being driven around in the back seat leans out the window of the first car, and then he asks the rich dude being driven around in the second car for some mustard.
Dijon mustard, so fine it's even made with white wine.
Pardon me, would you have any Grey Poupon?
But of course,
Grey Poupon.
Are they, like, making sandwiches in the back of a Rolls Royce?
You know somebody got huge props back then for coming up with a rhyme scheme like, so fine, it's even made with wine.
But of course, but of course, I have mustard in my car. The idea, though, was that Grey Poupon was a luxury item, even though it was affordable for pretty much anyone. In the 1990s, these commercials were playfully mocked in the first Wayne's World movie, which incidentally has a terrible ex-girlfriend named Stacy, which I did not appreciate. But also, references to Grey Poupon started appearing in a bunch of hip-hop songs, where mustard was sometimes this marker of wealth and status. Check out these 90s lyrics from the artist LZ, Jay-Z, and Big Daddy Kane.
So keep it real. What type of mission can I say you want? Because your mustard done changed to some Grey Poupon.
I got the Grey Poupon, you've been warned. Cause all beat return, well done for late me on.
I try not to do wrong, but I wanna be in that limo asking for the Grey Poupon for a change.
This might all sound like just a kind of clever and amusing cultural phenomenon, and it was. But actually, it also represented something more. I'm Cardiff Garcia.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is The Indicator, where every day we tell you a short story about the economy. And sometimes we bring snacks.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Swell Investing, an impact investing platform. Invest in high-growth companies of the future, innovating in clean water, renewable energy, and medical breakthroughs. Claim a $50 bonus through swellinvesting.com/indicator. This message comes from NPR sponsor, State Street Global Advisors. Download Crazy Enough to Work, a podcast series with Elizabeth Banks about the bold moves mid-cap companies make to thrive and survive. Provided by State Street Global Advisors Funds Distributors, LLC.
Income inequality in the United States has grown over the last few decades. The incomes of rich people have gone up by more than the incomes of poor people. People argue about what has caused this, and they argue about how much we should care about it, but economists do agree that it is happening. And you might suspect a bigger difference in income might also lead to some bigger cultural differences as well.
And this new working paper by economists Marianne Bertrand and Emir Kamenitsa explores that possibility. It explores whether the cultural distance between rich people and poor people has increased over time. In other words, it explores the question of whether the things that people do and the things that they buy and how they spend their time, whether those things have diverged between rich and poor over time. And how these economists investigated this issue is almost as interesting as what they ended up finding out.
Okay, here's how this works. Let's say you are talking to someone you've never met, and you only know that she's either rich or she's poor, but she is not middle class. So this means she either lives in a household with a really high income in the top 25% of all American households, or she lives in a household that is in the bottom 25%. That is all you know. And you only get to ask her one question about a consumer brand that she uses. What is the one brand you should ask her about to determine whether she is rich or whether she is poor? The one brand that if she says, yes, I use that, best predicts that she is rich. Here's Amir.
The question that's most discriminating between the rich and poor in the first year of the data, which is 1992, is did you buy Grey Poupon Dijon mustard?
Unbelievable. It's in the mustard. Back in 1992, the brand you should have asked about to answer this question is Grey Poupon mustard. Even more than Kodak film or Scotch tape.
But that is only one measure, and in one specific year, of behavior that helps to measure that cultural distance between rich and poor. And in their paper, Marianne and Emir include lots of other examples that they pulled from a variety of data sets that go back decades, like what brand of TV do you own, or even what brand of sandwich bag do you buy. These things also help predict whether someone was rich or poor.
And that is just consumer behavior. There are a lot of other things that also reflect cultural choices. Marianne and Emir looked at things like the movies and TV shows that people like to watch, the magazines they read, and how they spend their leisure time. Also, their social attitudes about things like abortion and law enforcement.
And the specific variables that matter are going to change over time. So for example, let's say you want to figure out whether the movies that rich people watch are increasingly different from the movies that poor people watch. Well, the variable about movies in 1998 that would have best predicted if you were rich was if you said yes to the question, have you watched Jerry Maguire?
Show me the money! Jerry, you better yell! Show me the money!
It was all the showing people the money.
Yeah.
They really were.
Well, because like Jerry Maguire in 1998 had already come out. But in 2016, the most predictive question was whether you'd seen a newer movie. Specifically, did you see Gone Girl?
How was your marriage, Nick?
Are you asking me if I killed my wife?
Yes, that is what she's asking you.
You know, I haven't seen that movie, but I still think he sounds guilty.
I'm not giving anything away. No spoilers here. Again, what matters is how predictive those movies, and also the other movies in this study, how predictive those movies are of being rich or poor in the year that they were relevant. Because then we can compare over time whether the movie watching habits between rich people and poor people have become more similar or more different.
Movies, magazines, TV shows, how people spend their time, the things they buy, their social attitudes. In all of these domains, Marianne and Emir were basically looking at the same thing. If you want to predict whether someone is rich or poor, how much does it help to know some of her cultural choices? In other words, how wide is the cultural distance between rich people and poor people? And most importantly, the whole point of this study, has that cultural distance between rich people and poor people widened over time or not?
The finding was that with an exception of stated social attitudes, there really has not been any change in how different the rich and the poor are culturally speaking. And this extent of cultural distance has been really remarkably stable throughout the years in our data.
In terms of the TV shows they watch, the stuff they buy, the magazines they read, how they spend their time, and in most of their social attitudes, the rich and poor have not grown further apart in the last few decades. That doesn't mean that they aren't culturally different. It just means that they aren't more culturally different than they used to be.
And there were a couple of exceptions. There was this tiny exception and then a much bigger exception, one that Emir just alluded to. The small exception is that rich and poor people might actually have become slightly more similar in terms of the movies they like to see. The one big exception has to do with their social attitude towards law enforcement.
It has become easier to predict that a person is rich if they answer yes to this question. Is it okay for law enforcement to strike a civilian?
But those exceptions aside, this kind of stability still does seem surprising given the rise in income inequality over the last few decades. Emir said he himself was surprised by his own paper's findings.
This is not at all what we expected. We expected to, you know, that there was a good chance that we might see increasing differences between these groups, which we know have grown apart in, if nothing else, in the amount of money they have. Now, that said, we did not come into this project with very strong opinions about what we would see because, you know, we really didn't know because no one had done this kind of data exercise before. So
still, even if cultural differences between rich and poor haven't gotten bigger over the last few decades, they also haven't gotten any smaller. And this is during a time when the economy also looks a lot different than it used to. A lot of things that help make culture available to us have gotten cheaper. Things like phones and computers and TVs and internet access. But those changes do not seem to have brought people culturally closer together.
Yeah, so whether it's good news or bad news that cultural differences between rich people and poor people haven't much changed, I guess it's just a matter of perspective.
It's a matter of mustard.
It is also a matter of mustard.
Matter of mustard.
We are posting a link to the paper over at npr.org/money. There's a lot more in there that we did not cover, so we encourage you to check it out. And a hat tip to Vox, who did that study cited in the paper about how Grey Poupon was appearing in hip-hop songs. Finally, this podcast is produced by Constanza Gallardo and Darius Rafian.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of How I Built This. And in case you missed the announcement, I want to tell you about the first ever one-day How I Built This Summit, sponsored by American Express. It's an all-day gathering for innovators and entrepreneurs, and we're hosting it this October 16th in San Francisco. If you want to find out more or get a ticket, go to npr.org/summit, and I hope to meet you there.